Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
And fighting is there! Robbie Brady!
The fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had a cheat.
Well, he never heated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
This is the Football Family, the 42's dedicated football podcast. I am David Snaid, and joining me for this week's show to provide you with a comfort blanket of knowledge and insight after the excesses of the bank holiday weekend are Gavin Cooney and Shane Keegan. The Friday and Monday games in the League of Ireland leave us with plenty to ponder. Most of all, is this season actually going to be any good? At least Gav's prayers were answered in the First Division as Longford Town finally won a game this season, hauling in Kerry for a much-needed 2-1 victory. We will continue to look inward once more when we ask each other just why we love the game and when that hook for sporadic joy and continuous suffering took its relentless hold. And before we well up too much, we will find the time to sour the tone with a chat about Manchester United Football Club. Has a club ever got into a cup final with such a sense of rancour? Hello there, lads.
What's the crack? I think, is it rancour or is it dread? I mean, are United fans not at the point now where they're like, geez, we could have just flagged that Coventry goal onside and we could move on with our lives?
I don't know. I wasn't expecting, I didn't watch all the match last night, so I'm actually at the stage of Manchester United now where I watched the first half and a bit of the second half, and then, because obviously I was on an evening off, I was on the couch with my wife. And then it's actually very similar to Manchester United. We are still watching Blue Bloods, that programme with Tom Selleck. It's about the 13th season of it, and it's absolutely fucking shite now. But we've invested so much time into it, and it's like part of that we just still stick with it, which is actually has parallels with how I feel now about Manchester United. That if I wasn't watching it with someone I loved, and actually this is going to sound really weird, and I'd imagine a lot of United fans who are like me. And the kind of higher thing where they do manage to get to a fair amount of games, or in a previous stage of their life were able to get to a lot more games than possibly they are now with watching on TV. When they're this bad, you would rather be able to actually go to a match. The worst thing is actually having to suffer through it watching it on TV, or sometimes getting the updates. At least, like, when you're there, you're with people who you care about and make it a little bit less shit. Whereas, and all you have to do, that's why, like, these watch along things, I wasn't expecting to go on to this already, right? But even these, like, watch along stuff with, it's not just United, all that stuff. Obviously, I know a lot of it is staged and it's for clicks and all the rest of it. I just can't imagine their life. All they have is the result. All they have is the result. And then you're fucked.
Well, what really say in response to that, David?
Well, in your role as co-commentator, watching sports. But no, do you know what I mean? Like, this is the thing. I know already the whole rundown for this podcast is out the window because you might as well just get into it. But, like, genuinely, this is what I'm saying. I just don't understand how you can only support, and I don't mean this in a bad way, and it'll probably come across where all you have is watching it on TV. I genuinely find it totally baffling. I just don't understand that how that cannot, you can only live through that prism of, well, because all you have then is the result.
You're comparing it to the fan experience of being there, is that what you're saying?
Just in general, yeah, just of what it means. I just don't understand. I genuinely, like, that's what I'm saying. Even like last night, when I got to like 4-0, I genuinely was thinking like 4-0, like, it'd actually be a bit of crack now to be there.
It looks great crack.
Especially at Valis. No, but just even with that, because you get to that stage where it's just like the gloves are off a little bit, do you know what I mean? And even the whole day, I don't know, I didn't see much of it.
I watched Shell's Derry instead, partly because I'm a good Irish football man, and partly because there's actually a sense of something riding on Shell's Derry, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, the...
Oh, were you able to see it, like, or was it not, like, watching it with Vaseline on the screen, no?
I wasn't too bad.
The camera.
I wasn't too bad. Like, Virgin have stepped up. I feel like Virgin have stepped up their covers this year. They may be using the yellow eye stream for the main angle. I'm not sure about that, but they definitely have cameramen there along the touchline and so forth, which means, well, that gave us that amazing Damien Duff,
yeah, true,
incredible Hulk style or Hulk Hogan style shout down the camera as he pumped his arms, and it was like great equalizing goal for Sean Boyd. I'm not did Shell
that was a great goal now
did Shell deserve a draw maybe But it was good news for Dublin, you know, because Dublin had fallen otherwise, you know, like three defeats and a draw otherwise for the Dublin clubs.
Is it the Damien Duff League of Ireland or is it the Dublin's League of Ireland?
That's the Damien Duff League of Ireland. He is the most interesting piece of content every week now. And like this amazing look down the camera is of the lower end of his viral moments. But it's still dominating, you know. We had the obviously the taking the fan out of the crowd the week before was tremendous.
Declan Bogro piece from in our parish on the site about obviously previewing the Derry match, obviously more of a profile of Rudy Higgins. He was kind of seemed to have a little bit of a cut off though for saying it's gimmicky. We kind of covered this. I don't think he could be, you know what I mean?
No. Like I said, I just think but it is amazing. Every week, when is it going to end? When is there going to be a Shells match that doesn't have a viral tweet clip on the back of it? It's absolutely amazing. But no, I said before, I think it's genuinely Damien Duff being Damien Duff. I think he is personality.
Is it distracting? Maybe referencing in the intro there, flawless intro, I must say. But like, is Duff now actually distracting us from what the league is at? I had a look. No one, there's not one team has won more than 50% of their matches. Bear in mind, we're 40. Like it is distracting a little bit. And I know obviously there's stuff with the pitches and all the rest of it. And we saw what happened up in Sligo with the Astro and the goal melt and all, which is just a bit farcical. But is some of the gifable content and the memes and all the rest of it with Duff and what he's doing, but is it actually distracting from what's happening with the league? He's even seen Stephen Bradley, I think he's beginning to lose patience with some of the stuff that's happening with Rovers and how they're performing this season.
Yeah, well, if it's distracting us from the general overall quality of the division so far this year, that's probably a fucking good thing. We need some kind of a distraction. That's been honest. I was up in AMDC Park on Friday night for yet another drab 0-0 draw. Don't get me wrong, Galway will be happy out with that result and happy out with how their life is going in general at the moment, but you could not possibly make an argument that it was an enjoyable spectacle. Wow. It was, if you're a Galway fan, it was like your previous argument around, you know, the concept of supporting Manchester United from afar as opposed to being in the middle of it. Like, as a Galway fan, they've got to be absolutely loving life at the moment. The atmosphere around the place was outstanding. That new pub they have not that new one now, but that pub they have behind the goal is just, what a class setup for a fan who wants to be able to have a few pints and watch the match at the same time. And again, another positive result, and then they rolled into Monday with an even better result again. Like, if you're a Galway fan, you know, my God, you're having the time of your life. But you couldn't possibly argue that the spectacle you're watching in terms of 90 minutes football actually on in front of you is enjoyable, because it's...
Oh. You know, if you're saying this and you can't find the tactical nuance and you can't find the intricacies to make that an appealing and you can't spin it, this is worrying.
Listen, you couldn't but applaud how hard Galway are to break down. Like, it's one of those examples again of, like... I suppose the obvious one you jumped at is a Tony Poole of Stoke, but I'm sure there's lots of examples where the system is so systematic that it almost doesn't matter who the parts are within the system. Like, whoever plays left wing, it doesn't matter who you are. You just what we tell the left winger to do every week. And whoever's playing right back, again, doesn't matter who you are. You know what the right back is to do for us. You just do what he's to do every week. And everybody's doing their jobs perfectly. They were without a few bodies Friday night, and it made absolutely little to no difference whatsoever. And Derry, who are, you know, one of the best sides in the country, okay, like everybody else, they're not exactly pouring on full auto, but at the same time, they are one of the best teams in the country. Like, they didn't have a sniff. Sean Patton had a chance late on in the game that went wide by the far post. That was literally the closest thing. A couple of shots from distance, patching at a shot from distance that hit the woodwork. In terms of actually carving out chances, I don't know when the last team, I don't know when the last time a team played a passing movement through a team was to create a chance for themselves. I mean, their numbers are absolutely ridiculous. Like, they have scored 8 goals in 14 league games and find themselves in fourth position. How is that possible?
20 points 20 points from 8 goals. It's insane.
But then it's similar for Shells. What's Shells have, 16 goals in 15 games?
Yeah.
Do you know?
That's not exactly setting the world alight, but it is compared to Galway.
But maybe, is this just the purest League of Ireland this year? Is that what this is?
Look, I mean, all I want is a proper title race, to be honest. I mean, we haven't had one in a while. 2020 was actually shaped up to be a really great season, I thought, before the pandemic hit. We had that amazing game between Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk before they absolutely Dundalked it under peak six after that. But obviously, that might have been the best Rovers team like they've had under Stephen Bradley. So it was kind of annoying that I think they only played 18 league games that season. But ever since, Rovers have been too good for the league. And their squad is still the best in the league, you know. But now, if we get a title race with Shells and Derry and Rovers all in the mix going into the final round of fixtures, that'd be good stuff, you know. And ideally, take it down and for as long as everyone keeps dropping points, that keeps Shells in the race. Like, I feel Shells are kind of maximizing. Maybe they have more to give. I feel like Shells are actually doing pretty well. Like, I mean, if every team looks at their own performances this season, or if they're gonna get like grade themselves. Who'd be happy? Obviously, Galway would be happy. I think Waterford would be pretty happy. Sligo might be reasonably happy. And Shells would be very happy. Other than that, I know Rovers and Derry are only 3 points off the top. Not very impressive in many parts of the season. Derry, I find kind of frustrating, really. And now they don't have as many injuries as Shamrock Rovers, but they do have lots of injuries. But that game against Shells, like, I feel like maybe they deserve to win it, but they didn't. While I felt like there were parts of the game in which they were the better team, I'm struggling to remember too many like great chances that they created. McMullen hits the post with that screaming volley in the first half, and then McMullen takes his goal really well after they press Shells trying to play out from the back. And then there's another chance in the second half, which Kearns makes a really good save under pressure from Hooban and takes a knock for it. I'm struggling to think of too many other chances, you know?
And they gave up. Like, it was just going through it because, like, again, I was watching just some of the clips that were even just from, say, Keith Tracy and Veers and stuff. And he would make the point, just felt as if neither team wanted to lose the game, that they were kind of just happy to plod along.
Yeah, and Dave, that's a problem with the league. If no one's going to, especially Shamrock Rovers, if they're not going to kick on, draws are good results, you know? So, like, at some point, it does become a slightly self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, I do think this is kind of, I don't think this is going to persist over the season. I still expect Rovers to kick on. They do seem a bit flakier than usual. Like, that's bizarre to lose 3-1 at home to Waterford. I think it's the first time Waterford have won away to Shamrock Rovers in 19 years. Obviously, it's a kind of a horrible moment for Leon Poles on the first goal, but I don't know. Like, obviously, Stephen Bradley said, like, they were way off their levels, especially in the first half. And fair play to Waterford. Some of their play was really good. I think Keith Long went to a back five over a back four, but you know, Podjaman didn't exactly, he wasn't isolated. Like, some of the link up with Connor Parsons was really good. But Waterford scored two, you know, cracking goals from outside the box. Rovers hit the woodwork 3 times, I think. And while Farooj and Byrne came off the bench, they're still missing loads of players, including Gary O'Neill, you know, who I think is a big miss for them, you know, like in terms of profile of player who they can't easily replace. They don't have anyone of Jack Byrne's standard, but they have very good attacking players who will create goals and will score goals. But do they have another Gary O'Neill figure? I'm not actually sure that they do. And you could see, especially Podjaman dropping off into that space and driving at the Rovers defence caused them a lot of problems. So for Rovers to lose that game, it was obviously like a headline result. They're very inconsistent, like you say. Like, I mean, they've not won very often this season. Like, they're averaging 1.6 points per game, which is not enough to get it done. Like, they've averaged at least 2 in all their title winning seasons. So I don't know, but I still think there's enough mitigating circumstances in that Waterford game to say that they're not in any kind of major trouble yet, and no one around them has been good enough to build the kind of 9-point lead that I feel maybe they would need later on in the season.
Like you were saying it was the point was a good result for Shells. Like the draw was a brilliant result for Rovers. Like they've got away with one completely, like almost no ground lost again. And this is the problem, is that it was the same last year. Like if Rovers are stuttering and stumbling, somebody needs to go and pull 10 points clear.
Well, Shells did at one stage early on the season. Weren't you like 8 or 9 points clear?
Yeah, it was very early though, wasn't it? I mean, I'm talking when we're hitting, what, how many games have we played at the moment?
15. The top three have played 15, and then the middle four from Galway in fourth, Bowes fifth, Waterford sixth, they have 40.
Like, I would be inclined to argue that Rovers are missing that many players, and they just have a history of being so good in the second half of the season that for me to even contemplate Rovers not winning the league would mean that it's got to be 10 points plus after somewhere between 20 and 25 games.
Right.
to actually make it likely that they actually might win the league. Maybe, like, I don't know, is it more than just injuries? Is there something missing there? We keep just putting it down to injuries. Look, we did get Jack Byrne back in the pitch last night, Ferrugia back in the pitch last night. Maybe there is something not quite clicking, and maybe that's been masked and covered up by the fact that they're missing so many injuries or so many players. But oh no, I still find it impossible to believe that they're not going to go and win, you know, 8 out of 10 games when it comes to the last 10 games of the season.
But then there will be Europe as well. That's going to be another factor to consider in this in terms of, and it doesn't bode well at the moment with the clubs. Like, you always want to see, there'll be people listening now and saying, no, we don't. But you do want to see, some of us want to see, obviously, the League of Ireland do well in Europe in terms of clubs kind of representing well. And it doesn't really bode well. Like, I know it's still like a little bit of time off before those games actually happen, but you would like to think, like Gav referenced it, I kind of said it and you've even said it there, but even just the that consistency side of things are just looking solid, you know? Like, it doesn't feel as if, it doesn't really bode very well. Like, I couldn't get over the fact that even just looking, I was going through the stats of it, but just to kind of get a handle on it. But the fact that, like, Derry at home, in a home game, would give up over 60% possession, even though Shells are top. Maybe did that just play into thinking, well, if less Shells have the ball because they're not going to be able to actually break us down? Do you know what I mean? Like, if teams are continually dropping points as the season goes on, yeah, it's good for maybe the overall maybe competitiveness of the league that, like, you know, it's always a good thing maybe that, you know, teams aren't getting hockeyed and all the rest of it. But at the same time, there is that element where you want to see the teams at the top be impressive. You want to see them actually properly challenging it. If it's a title race, not by default, but if it's a title race where it becomes them purely because the top three teams aren't actually capable of pulling away, that kind of gives it a different element of what it actually is then. Do you know what I mean? Hasn't got that same sense of excitement, you know what I mean? I would say.
Actually, like, of course, that's exactly, like, you take last night's game as being a game between two of the best three sides in the league. Like, you know, in most other leagues, unless it's coming really to the end and both teams are overly cautious, in most leagues, that's a cracker of a game, or it should be a cracker of a game with loads and loads of quality. But reality is, and look, you know, I think most of us do the absolute best we can to highlight the positives in the league, and that should be the case. But at the moment, it's hard to highlight. You tell me the moments that we've had this season where we've had, you know, a brilliant team performance or even a great individual moment of quality or anything like that. They've been few and far between. Mm. They really have. Look, let's be honest. Last year was the same too. Last year was the same too. You had a far from virtuoso Rovers performance over the course of the season, winning the title at their ease. And I'm not sure why that's the case, or, you know, am I codding myself? Has this been the standard every year for the last few years?
I mean, Shamrock Rovers have been better than this, you know, the last few years, in fairness. And they made a slow start to last season, but I feel they were a bit better at this point of the season compared to now. But there are other factors in it. Like, I mean, obvious one was, like, the Shells Rovers game at Talca a couple of weeks ago did threaten to be a very good game, and it started really well, but the pitch ruined it. Like, and there's other things as well. Like, obviously the pitch in Derry doesn't help anyone play great football. And Gareth McGlynn was making this point on the commentary on Virgin last night. The schedule isn't helping anyone either. I mean, like, there's too many games crammed into the first start of the season. We're having too many Friday, Monday turnarounds. Yeah. I have no problem with the bank holiday. I actually like the staggered kickoffs on a bank holiday with LOI TV and stuff. Like, it's actually I've no problem with that, really. But like regular Mondays, there's too many. Like the season is too short. Like McLean was making the point, give us an extra 2 weeks at the end of the season to give it more breathing space. And I think it should, because you get all these games in the start of the season. And then if you do get a title race, the gap between league games then is too long, especially when you've got cup semi-finals and stuff. And, you know, the momentum is all out of kilter. And I think that's partly leading to injuries, like Derry again or Dinu Dubai injuries. Like if you've got a clash between two of the three top teams on television, you're hoping the McElhenney and Duffy are fit to play it, to be quite honest, from a neutral point of view, and obviously from a Derry point of view. And I think one of the reasons why the league is so inconsistent and everyone is dropping points at the moment is the Friday-Monday turnaround, and the squads best suited to deal with that are Derry and Shamrock Rovers, and they're missing a whole ton of players, particularly in Rovers' case. And I saw John O'Connor on Twitter put out the form table across the last five games. Galway are the most informed team across the last five games, and they've won twice with three draws. They've got 9 points from five, and the team most out of form across those games are Pats, and they've got 4 points. So there's only 5 points between first and tenth in the form table over the last five games.
There's going to be another Friday, Monday batch, isn't there, before the mid-season break? And the mid-season break is a little bit earlier in June this year as well. It's going to be around the June Bank Holiday weekend, and May, June, I in the May, start of June, there's going to be Friday, Monday games. And then what's in looking here now, just even for the games on Friday, because like it's mad, you look at it, like Shell's playing against Drogheda, so Drogheda are going to be buzzing now after the Loud Derby and the nature of that win. Like, you can see that being a bit of a grueler of a game, I'm not going to lie. I'm not sure, I actually haven't checked yet where I'm going to be. I think it could be a tally for Rovers and Pats. Like, you talked to Shane, so you mentioned earlier about a kind of, like, I'd say Pat's best performance this season was the second half against Rovers in Richmond Park a few weeks ago, and they came from 1-0 down. But then at the same time, Rovers should have been 3-0 up inside 20 minutes in that game. What else have we got this Friday, even just looking ahead? So we've got Derry Bowls. Again, you never know what, maybe you don't know what you're going to get from Bowls.
Like Gabs after highlighting there, like Galway, the most informed team. What did you say? How many points?
9 points, I think it is. Is it 2 wins and 3 draws?
They've scored 3 times in those 5 games. The most informed team in the League of Ireland have scored 3 times in their last 5 games. I mean, it's utterly ridiculous. Now, I sound like I'm being hard on Galway. Obviously, I'm not. I'm just trying to highlight the fact that this is the template at the moment. Is you know, being hard to score against seems to be what gets you up. I mean, what? Let me have a quick look. One. They've conceded one, is it? That's not right, is it? It is right. They've conceded one goal in their last 6 games. Utterly ridiculous. Like, that is outstanding. Absolutely. Golly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you like, that's probably what I got you. Towards the end of the pre-season, remember, like, just to like plug another piece that is up on the site, I went and spent an evening with John Caulfield and all the organ up, but just watching, like being around the place, watching training and how they were doing it. And it's like what you're saying there, but the system, like you can see how well drilled they are. But I'll be honest, it was an enjoyable session, and it wasn't just because I was there, you know, not kind of like stage stuff, you know what I mean? But even like the around the place, it is kind of you can understand why maybe players would buy into it, even just how Ollie would be. It was very interesting just to see it. Ollie is the one who very would be the one leading it in terms of how they're set up. But like, just even watching it, brilliant in how he deals with players and how he gets his message across. So in terms of the fact that it's not maybe a surprise, it's maybe that's come now after a few games of getting settled into the Premier Division. Like, they've scored 8 goals and conceded 7. And they've scored 8 goals and they've got a plus goal difference. That's like brilliant. But you can understand why players, when even being up there, where, don't get me wrong, maybe some players would prefer to play slightly different. But when you've got a coach like that, and then obviously John Caulfield kind of overseeing everything, like, you could see them getting stronger as the season goes on, you would imagine.
Yeah, that piece you referenced earlier, Declan's piece with around Rory Higgins. Yeah. I mean, the word Stephen Kenny used around Rory Higgins was authentic, and I mean that's Ollie. That's Ollie to an absolute T as well. What you see is what you get. There's no sense of putting on a show or anything. He's just you know, he's just as down to earth as you can possibly get, and players will respond to that, I think, you know.
But even little things, like, but just even in terms of when he was like, what I found like interesting purely, and like for you as a coach, you're probably thinking, yeah, well, this is just clearly obvious. This is, of course, what any decent coach would do, but maybe it doesn't always happen. But it was just even good to see where, when, and believe it or not, they do actually do a fair bit of work when they have got the ball, Galway. But it did seem, it was still at the back of mind, at the back of all the reason for it is they know, and even Ollie Horgan, and I referenced it in the piece where he said in games, we will lose the ball in this position, this position, and this position. This is when it's going to happen, and this is how we recover straight away. Like,
and you could see, you could absolutely see that 100% in the, there was one example the other night. So as I was obviously on co-commentary for BBC Radio File with Eric White, and there was one scenario that we highlighted the other night where Daniel Kelly, one of the fastest players in the league, there he went on a counter-attack. And for a moment, it looked like there was a real chance on. It was like 3v2 in Derry's favour as they counterattacked off the back of a corner. And within, I would say, 5 seconds or less, every single Galway player was in their own third of the field.
Yeah.
It was incredible. It was incredible the hunger they showed to track back. And I mean, you're tracking back there against you're trying to filter back there against a fella who's carrying the ball at, you know, quicker than anybody can in the league, and they still all did it. It was just, you know, that's maybe where you take your joy from. It's from moments like that in terms of what they're doing at the moment.
Well, that's a perfect little segue, Shane, into this next part of the pod. You were saying there about taking moments of joy. So over the bank holiday weekend, and obviously I threw this into the WhatsApp, and I'm hoping that you guys aren't going to laugh at me when I say this, but my nephew, 8-year-old nephew, ran over to me after when we were out having a bit of field, and he comes up and he wasn't like, oh, see Pat's won on Friday or whatever, blah, blah, blah. First thing he came over was, did you see Levy's touch? And we're talking there about moments of skill or whatever, and like, I loved it because obviously I had seen it when I was watching the game on LOI TV on the Friday, and when you're watching it on TV, obviously you can see, it was just amazing. I don't know if anyone's seen it. Obviously, it's worth doing a search for it. I think it's Pat's kind of, I retweeted it the other day, and Pat's have it up. But the pass in from Forrester into Keane Levy, and he spins, touches away his left foot, spins away from the defender in the pirouette in one go, and passing the score from the end of it. It genuinely probably would have been contender for goal of the season in terms of, from after that, it was all one touch cross into the box, layoff, and then the shot was missed by Brandon Kavanagh. But I just loved that sense, even just from my nephew, of just how excited he was by the touch of it. And I was like, we're talking about how brutal some of the league has been this year, but like, they are some of the moments that, and it goes back to what we were saying at the start of actually being going to games and seeing stuff, and it got me thinking after a few drinks, which is always good ideas come after a few drinks in a bank holiday, of those moments from growing up that actually have stuck with you, maybe the both is, and obviously that kind of, you think you can remember, or just you kind of remember from back in the day when you're a kid going to a game, or even a bit older that have just stuck in your head or in your heart, Shane.
Yeah, well, there's one I think I've referenced them a few times on the podcast here and there. Like, my, if we're talking about most skillful players I've ever seen and best goals or best touches, like, every single time my go-to is Matt Letizia. It's the, when you marry the skill to the fact that he really did not have any interest in moving outside a 10 by 10 yard square on the pitch for an entire 90 minutes, I think that just makes it even all the more interesting to see, or all the more entertaining and funny, that you've got this fella who just literally do what he wanted, but absolutely do what he wanted. Like, when you sent through your text, and I'm thinking, right, what bits, like, before I go Googling, or before I said, like, he is the one that I immediately jumped to. There are others, like JJ Okocha is another one who kind of came to mind in terms of some of the maneuvers that he's pulled off during these times. But the TCA for me, and then when I did, like, you made me lose a good an hour and a half of my life by sending in that text. But
well, I hope you didn't go googling Matt Letizia's recent work.
No, 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 and I will refuse to be. I will refuse to ever allow my wonderful memories of Matt Letizia to be sullied by what a fucking arsehole he's turned into. I'll just stick with Matt the footballer. Thank you very much. And yeah, I think I meant like I'm forever showing me young lad videos of him and all that, just because some of the stuff he was doing was absolutely ridiculous. But if we had to go with, well, when I say if we had to go with one, I'm going with one game. Like, people need to go and Google again the two goals that he scored against Newcastle in 1993. I mean, they are, how has it ever happened before that a fella has, like, well, we had that Tony Yeboah day, didn't we? It's fairly rare that a fella scores arguably the best and second best goals of an entire Premier League season in the same game on the same day.
That's the one where he runs and flicks, one of them is he flicks it over and then he out ahead and then the little side foot. He scuffs it though. He does scuff it though.
Like, doesn't he? Rolls it. He rolls it. Matt Letizia doesn't scuff balls. He knew what he was doing. And then in the same game, he gets the second one where the ball comes across to him off the corner kick and he just cushions it on his calf. And you know that ridiculous languid half-volley thing that he used to do time and time again? He did it for a free kick as well. Do you remember that, where he copied Glenn Hoddle free kick?
A little flick up
flick up in that languid half. How he used to generate the power that he used to generate from those scenarios, I have absolutely no idea. But yeah, he is my go-to, and I'd be here. We could do a podcast on our own of all the ridiculous moments. And there's, look, not to steal Gav's thunder, but there's the obvious ones like the Keane Levy's touch. What did it most remind me of? Sure, probably most remind me of the Dennis Bergkamp touch. So the actual touch itself. So look, obviously that was, Bergkamp's had two moments, hasn't he? He's had the Newcastle one, and then he's had the one for the Dutch where he's playing for them as well. But yeah, look, you get those moments. But I prefer when they come, Bergkamp's is just a genius. How do I describe myself properly? Like Bergkamp is playing at the highest level. I just have kind of more appreciation for a Letizia doing it, because he's just, this is a fella playing with a club that's about 50 million levels below the level he should be at. But
yeah,
he's happy because nobody asks him to run around and tackle.
Definitely Zidane for me. Yeah, that was the first, the Zidane roulette was the kind of, because there were ones which he'd take out of the air and then like begin the roulette as he was on his way down, like in his descent. It was crazy. And obviously that was the, obviously tried to do that roulette outside the house as a kid. And like, ridiculous. It was just an interesting and ostentatious way of me jumping over the ball. Like, I tried dragas with my studs and couldn't. I just missed the ball entirely. So definitely Zidane. I was also lucky enough to grow up in the glory era of the Pepsi ads and the Nike ads. I only recently, like, maybe I'm gonna sound like Matt Letizia here, but the Ronaldinho YouTube video at the Camp Nou where he flicks it up and volleys it off the crossbar and keeps on. That's faked, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It had to be gathered.
Yeah. Fuck's.
Yeah.
Fuck's sake.
But it's that was the first, wasn't that the first video, football video, to get like a million views on YouTube?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I think so, yeah. Disappointed that. So, but Ronaldinho more generally. And then definitely the other one sticks out from my childhood is Damien Duff. Like, Duff against Spain and at the World Cup, like,
yeah,
he made it look so easy, like, to dribble past players. And like, that was the World Cup that got me kind of hooked on football, really. Like, I only started watching it properly maybe toward the end of 2001. I remember, like, family would get together and watch the qualifiers. I remember the Dutch game, I remember the Iran game at home, and kind of remember a little bit of the away game, just watching on TV. But then obviously, like, obsessed with that World Cup. And Duff, oh my god, he was one of the players of that tournament, made it look so easy to dribble by mostly Spanish players, and it bred in me this painfully naive idea that, geez, sure, we're always at these World Cups. I mean, I should definitely get into this. I was just like, if we qualify for another World Cup before I retire, I'll genuinely be surprised.
This is the thing, like it's 22 years since that World Cup.
I know. And like, it'll be another 20. It does feel like it could easily be another 22 years. Anyway, that's a depressing tangent to this very soulful conversation. But
I'm actually just realised, so the last time Ireland played in the World Cup, I was 13. The next time Ireland play in the World Cup, I could be 60.
All right, yeah.
Well, it's possible.
But you mentioned saying that run out. Go on.
No, I was going to say it's okay. Mark Hannum's got this.
Oh, stop.
It's a low blow, that.
That's taking the wind out of myself. I don't know. I'm gonna need a second just to recover from that. But like Gav, so you mentioned the Ronaldinho, but that's actually because even around YouTube, I'm trying to think, that was around 2002. Because remember the whole thing of Ronaldinho nearly signing for United, and then Barcelona hijacked it, and then there was the World Cup before that when he got that goal. Actually, again, the 2002 World Cup when he lobbed Seaman. There's that story apparently of English journalist Boone Seaman in the mix zone after that game. I've never got to the bottom of who that actually was who did it. I think someone said that it was like actual journalist Boone. We'll see what it was like now. It's totally different. In fairness, it'd be a fan cam now. That's what it would be. This was the original. But Ronaldinho is a force I can remember on YouTube and like some of the skills, and you'd see watch Spanish football on Sky Sports and look at the half Sky, and I was like, oh my god, this fella is an absolute genius. But the two miles that stand out for me, force was Beckham from the halfway line, because hearing about it on the radio and literally watching it and on Match of the Day when you actually see him scoring it. One of the things I can remember from my childhood is actually being at Wembley for the 95 Cup Final when Paul Lloyd outscored for Everton and he beat United. So it was 95, so it would have been 7. Yeah, nearly 7. And just the actual crying my actual eyes out, and then getting stuff thrown at me by Everton fans because I was in the Everton section with my dad. And so, like, I was really disappointed that he didn't get relegated this season, to be honest. But also, in terms of an actual player and trying to copy someone for the first time, one of the things I first remember trying to copy was a finish was from Trevor Malloy, little dinked finish. I can't remember who it was against, but I remember watching him when he ran down the side and the goalkeeper came out and he dinked the finish. You could just see it and you're like, how the fuck did he do that? He was running the way he was running, and then that little kind of dinked finish over there. I actually hadn't seen that before in the flesh at a match where you actually see someone just like chip the keeper running out but being that close. It was just something that even now kind of has stayed in my head.
Yeah, a couple of honourable mentions when I did disappear down that rabbit hole there for a while that you sent me down, David. There's you remember the warm-up, Dimitri Payet in the warm-up where he spits out the chewing gum, does keepy uppies for about 5 or 6 touches, then picks it back up into his mouth. That was very entertaining.
That's actually what he did in his interview for the Ireland job. Turn it down.
But not Gus Payet, you muppet.
Well, what did you say? All I heard
was Payet. Remember the West Ham?
Oh,
the
man, West Ham. Sorry, the fellow with the hair.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
And again, I always like the fellas, like I say, who are like, you know, the fella who's indulged at the club because he doesn't defend or he doesn't run around, but he does do moments of madness. Along the Payet, Letizia line of thinking there, again, another absolute nut job, Adel Tarat.
There's
one with Tarat where he has the ball over by the corner flag and he's goading the defender and he's dragging it forward and back away from the defender. Next thing he does, an absolutely ridiculous piece of skill when the defender comes in to try and have him. And I only noticed for the first time watching it back, the defender is Paul McShane.
Oh, okay.
I always hated that. Like, I remember, was it Nani kind of did a little, basically, bit of piss taking against Arsenal, and he was roundly condemned for it. Maybe that's just a kind of a British football culture thing, that it's wrong to mock your opponents like this. I think it's great.
Do you remember the Kinchelskis one while he was playing for Rangers?
Stood
up in the ball and pretended he was looking into the box from a height. Yeah, that was that was probably a step too far.
I would be curious. Hopefully, people who are listening to this by the time it comes out, even for next week, just do actually let us know what mom was, because like there's bound to be loads, random ones, like stuff that sticks. I remember one of the things that sticks in my head, it's nothing to do with actual football, but you can remember it now, was when Pats won the league in 99, like being ready to run on the pitch, and there was a few of us there, and I thought for some reason someone decided to write all the names of the Pats players on a Coke ball. I know that sounds really like just random, but it's a matter of just something that actually stay in your head for so long.
The other thing, the one other thing that came to mind, because obviously we're talking about a time, if we're talking about when we were younger.
Fuck, John Daly has just been sacked as Pats manager.
What?
Bloody hell.
Jeez, I won't forget this. Yeah. Just confirmed there from Pats have just released it there.
So I'm looking at here, yeah. Jeez, they don't stick around, do they?
Jamie Mack. Pats can confirm that John Daly has been relieved of his duties as first team manager. And then there's a quote from Gary Kelleher. We would like to thank John for his time at the club and in particular our FAI Cup success at the Aviva last November. We wish John the very best for the future. So very brief, to the point. They obviously have someone ready to go if they've made that decision now, you would think. Second, I'm trying to think.
Who?
Who
could they have ready to go? There was no, like, Hatch had to turn to, or Dundalk had to turn to Noel King. So who, who is out there?
There's a come and get me plea from Shane Keegan.
No. I think you said that the Dundalk one as well.
Well, you said Dundalk turned to Noel King after they also tried to get Keith Long. Now, Keith Long has also said that he was going to be staying loyal to Waterford. You would imagine at this point, maybe at the moment, Pats would be a bit more of a bit more appealing job than where Dundalk are at the moment. But I'm surprised it's happened. I'll be honest, I'm surprised. Like, surprised in the sense that obviously it's the second time in the early part of the season before mid-season break that Pats have gone and sacked the manager. What time was it? Was it around this time last year he got rid of
Tim Clancy?
You got Clancy as well. Clancy went. Yeah,
that's to me. This is a bit of a mad one. Like they're 2 points off fourth. Like fourth, no more often than not gets a European qualification. They're 2 points off fourth. Did anybody? Yeah, I suppose maybe we started the season by thinking. We probably did start the season by thinking that they were good enough to go with. They're doing what we expected. Shells are doing what we expected them to do, really, isn't it?
It was a strange. I'll be honest, at the start, if Pats maybe had been able to keep a hold of Sam Curtis and Adam Murphy maybe as well, and I'm trying to think, obviously, Mark Doyle left, like Norman Jr. left, obviously, I don't know, there has been a bit of upheaval at Pats in terms of players coming in and a bit more appeal. I'll be honest, I was expecting more from where they're at now, I'll be honest, but I thought the nature of a bit of the overhaul, I was thinking, yeah, you could see this maybe taking a bit of time to actually settle down, you know.
Had a bit of success recently under a fella who's available at the moment.
Stevie O'Donnell.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised.
I'd be surprised. Yeah. But then football, do you know what? Let's be honest. Like we're talking there. We've just been talking about stuff that kind of got you hooked in football. But most of the stuff, a lot of stuff that happens as well is just pure madness.
Tim Clancy left after 13 games last season. So we've 15 games in. They haven't, like, the results haven't been poor this season, and performances haven't been great either. Like you say, like the high point of the season was beating Shamrock Rovers, and that game could have really gone the other way in many respects. I don't mean to be kind of curmudgeonly or unfair in saying that, but evidently they feel like performance and results weren't good enough, and they weren't really. Like, but they just have so much squad turnover there every year. Like it is a bit excessive. Like, and that's obviously, like, Curtis is a massive loss, really. When you look at, apart from the non-performance in Europe last year under Daly, like they obviously won the cup and the league form was really strong as well. But yeah, that's a tough scene for him.
And the goalkeeper, and you say there about the overall, not to change too much. It's part of the reason why I was expecting Derry to be a lot better and a lot more consistent this season than last season, because like Ruddy Higgins made the point saying that the squad was pretty much established and he only made two signings. You know, like it has been a bit more of an overhaul for Pats. But maybe again, like. I know from some of my own friends, I don't think to be too many would be utterly kind of maybe sad that maybe Daly's gone just because of how the nature of how this season is. But if you look at as well what he done last year and coming in and providing that stability and turning things around pretty quickly and getting confidence going, maybe that was part of the thinking for Gary Kelleher and the decision makers thinking, well, he showed he was able to get a hold of a group of players last season. Maybe he should have been able to do the same for the start of this season. And I say, Shane, you're probably just delighted. This is probably another reason for you thinking, yeah, do you know what? I've made the right decision getting out of this game.
Yeah, well, look, I don't know. It's, yeah, I don't know. It's, I was going to say, and Garrett, like, I would have, until recently, I would have said that Garrett was one of the better owners in terms of giving people time and giving people breathing space and that. But that's, yeah, probably two. Well, was the Tim Clancy one a surprise? It's a quick turnaround, though.
But part of my, we're discussing this pretty much on the fly, because as I said, it literally broke as we were chatting. My thinking would be, I'm thinking maybe, I don't think that Daly would not have been in the top two or three, probably even in the top five of Kelleher's options or preferences when the job first came available when Clancy left. So I think, like, it was only for the fact that Daly did so well and he got results that he stuck with him, and obviously, and then he got the job. There would have been other people who are available now who would have been interviewed for the job and would have maybe come close to possibly even getting the job, who would be available and who maybe Kelleher might have had a preference for, who are available now for Pats to go for. That's what made me instantly think. I was thinking, right, he's made a decision now because, not that he has an excuse or a reason, but maybe it wasn't up to the standards of what he expected. And they, don't get me wrong as well, they think about it, like, they've brought in players and they've spent decent money on players in terms of wages this year, Pats, in terms of bringing in, like, the likes of, say, Rory Keaton and others who would be earning good money. So Kelleher is probably thinking, well, they should be doing better than what they are, and that's probably
Do you have any names, David? I mean, who was in the mix the last time?
Well, I'm gonna, before I say it, because obviously on the pod I have to obviously make a few phone calls on it and check. I don't think there's a couple of people maybe who, yeah, it's tough to say at the moment, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's another announcement fairly soon. That's my own instinct on it. I could be wrong, but I'm just,
what was your man's name who was at Ipswich? He was been bounced around a good bit there, wasn't he,
at Ipswich?
Yeah Nash.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Jared Nash, I think his name has been bounced around a good bit.
Yeah, Jared Nash.
Right. That wasn't who I was thinking of, I'll be honest. I don't know if he was in for it before. Was he in for the Bowles job?
Seems to have been linked with a good few in the last few years, yeah.
I think it was the Cork job he was close to, wasn't it?
A good few, I think, yeah.
Well, it's got a minute. This is, in fairness now, something for us to get, well, to get my teeth into, stuck into now over the next little while. Disappointing for him, not going to lie. Like, a lot of Pats fans will have fond memories of that cup final. He'll always be the manager who was the victorious manager in front of a record FAI Cup final crowd. So that's one managerial exit in the League of Ireland. Is there another one incoming? In the Premier League, Manchester United, Erik ten Hag.
They should sack him before the cup final now, to be honest.
Do you think so?
Yeah, no, they should. I think they should.
They
won't. But they should.
What's your reasoning for that? I think you and Michael Owen are of the same opinion.
Have you seen how bad they are? Carragher said did he say that as well? That's interesting.
Carragher said he should go before the cup final as well, did he?
Carragher didn't say that. Carragher said that they're the worst coach team in the league. And it's kind of hard to disagree. Like, poor Casemiro. Like, basically, that was Casemiro's Vietnam. Like, I mean, Carragher basically said he has to retire now.
Well, Carragher retired. Like, he said, go over to Saudi or go to the MLS.
And it was so bad. And, like, Casemiro's legs are probably gone and his best days are obviously definitely behind him. He's literally in the worst team in the world to expose his current shortcomings. Because the way United play, they just leave... Carragher showed this multiple times in Monday Night Football. It's not a secret. They press high, but the back four don't step up and press with everyone else. There's a massive amount of space in midfield. And Casemiro, being played out of position at centre-back, wants to be aggressive and jump in, but his legs are gone. You know, so like that was a tough scene there against Palace on Monday. And Palace are also kind of a nightmare style for United in that Eze and Elise are absolutely fantastic and they do their best work in the space the United leave, you know, between the lines and in front of the defence. So obviously they've been smithering by injury, but when you look at the league table, the question to ask is not how United have so few points, it's how on earth they have so many. Like, I mean, they've been threatening blowout defeats like that to teams like Brentford throughout the season, you know, so it's finally coming to Palace.
Yeah, and the reason they have points, we've spoken about it before, lads, the reason they have points is because that they do have some individuals of extreme quality who are able to give you individual moments of extreme quality. It has you know, it has little or nothing to do with game plan or coaching or anything like that. When, you know, when Garnacho or Bruno Fernandes or somebody like that comes up in a moment, like if you've got quality, which United do have quality, like Bruno Fernandes and Garnacho, fellas like that are you know, top tier players. There's not anywhere close to as many top tier players as United had in the past, but it doesn't matter who the manager is. It doesn't matter how shite the team, the game plan is. You know, more individual players of that quality are able to come up with moments that win you games and win you points. And that's been the only thing that's been muddling them through.
Yeah. Sorry, just between how this chat now is going and between process and what's happening at Pat's, your head's a bit muddled.
Sorry, tonight should obviously stay, so Dave is not completely overwhelmed on this. so soon after a bank holiday weekend.
It's an interesting one for me, and what I find interesting about this at the moment is because everything else that Ineos have done since they've come in has just been so to the point. There's been no messing. There's been like very clear, like even to the point where like people, like the IT crowds room, are they getting emails for being dirt or for not for being messy or whatever, and like dressing rooms were messy or something. It's like Johnny Mac, like I haven't seen too many clean dressing rooms and whatever. But like everything else that Ineos have done has just been so concise, like no messing about. You got your man Omar Bedard, is that what I mean, from Man City to be the chief executive. They've obviously got Jason Wilcox in there now. It looks as if they obviously Dan Ashworth is bringing Newcastle to kind of, well, he's getting like some sort of tribunal now to take on his job. Everything else they've done, whereas they have nothing has been set in stone for Ten Hag, which makes me think he's going to be a goner in the summer. Like everything else, they're putting everything else in place.
But they can't persist with this, you know. Like Carragher last night said the only scenario in which he felt it might stay was almost by default. That Ineos have changed so much the club, they might not want to change the manager straight away, or they might struggle to find the right candidate to go into a club in such flux. But I can't see it. I think they've been ruthless in every other department of the club. It would make no sense that they wouldn't be ruthless with the manager. United squad, injuries have been bad for them, but like every team has suffered injuries this season, like probably down to the extra added time being played and the schedule being so intense and so forth. But there's absolutely no way in which you could say that Ten Hag is making United better than the sum of their parts. They're worse. They're worse than their individual players. Like, they're a problematic squad, but like it's not this bad, you know. The cup final, you know, like I can see no world in which they win that cup final, you know. And if they didn't have the cup final at the end of the season, he might even be falling on a sword now. What I can't understand are the reports linking them with the Bayern job. I mean, if Bayern are obviously pretty dysfunctional, behind the scenes. Like, they keep hiring managers and then sacking them to appoint inferior ones. They're getting rid of Tuchel, which obviously there's reasons for that behind the scenes. Maybe they're falling out, but I'm quite surprised by that. But if they go to for Ten Hag, like, that's crazy stuff, you know. There's a report now linking them with Hansi Flick. I think that's probably more realistic. But the idea that what Ten Hag has done at United is an audition for Bayern is kind of crazy. But maybe there is definitely a thing about United where no one is excelling there anymore. Like, it's actually, like, look at what people have gone on to do since leaving United. The last couple of weeks we've seen Jadon Sancho, like, amazing in the Champions League semi-final.
You look at what he's doing for Dortmund generally in the Bundesliga, and like, he hasn't done much, like, you know. I would almost argue that what Sancho has done in the last little while is kind of indicative of actually saying, well, that's his level. Do you know what I mean? He's 100% capable of being sensational like that, but he's not capable of even being a little bit lower than that consistently. Do you know what I mean?
But even like, you know, Kieran McKenna getting Ipswich promoted, Carrick doing good things at Middlesbrough, Ralph Rangnick, you know, turning his nose up at Bayern to bring Austria to the Euros. Like, I'm sure there are unique factors at United that have made it unbelievably difficult, if not impossible, to succeed in the last few years, and have made people look a lot worse than they actually are. But Ten Hag is currently making the team look a lot worse than it actually is. So this thing, it's done. Like,
who would you like to see come in, David?
I'll be honest, I kind of would actually like to see Ten Hag stay for one more season. Like, what's one more? If everything's supposed to be improving now under the new structure in terms of how players are going to be bought and all the rest of it, and this is gonna, like, it's not gonna be a huge, just the only thing I'll say is that I'm not expecting a huge transfer window where there will be like 5-6 players coming in. You would imagine there'd be a fair few going out, but like, I just like, the last 10 years has just been a cycle of getting rid of managers and then eventually getting rid of them again when everything else hasn't been good enough in terms of the players. Whereas if now this new structure of the people who are there is supposedly going to improve things, well then give the manager who has 1 year left on his contract, at least give him that chance. Get, no problem saying if he still makes a bollocks of it next season, well then you can get rid of him. But like, I still will be of the opinion that even though it's been a dreadful season, and I do think the injuries have been far worse for United than on your clubs, even added in with the fact that the depth of squad just isn't there to actually even cope with it. Do you know what I mean? I do think there is that element to it as well, and just underperforming players still. And it is that, I'm not saying, like, at no point can you say, well, he's definitely the manager to do this, because even a lot of the stuff he would have done in his fourth season or so, where he was very kind of strong on certain players and discipline, and maybe dropping players who weren't in form, that's kind of deserted him a little bit, because maybe it's because of circumstance and necessity, but sticking with underperforming players and players who haven't been good enough. But then also then you're thinking as a coach or as a manager, well, do you actually then just become a bit more pragmatic and change how you set up to kind of, I don't know, not get beaten 4-0 like by a team like Crystal Palace? Do you know what I mean? Like, there is that other element to it where he should have done it. But I'm just thinking of every other kind of argument seems to be, oh well, let's see how players get on when there's a proper football structure in place, which seems to be getting put in place now. Well, will that drastically change things? Well, like, I don't know. It does just seem to be a mess. Unless Ineos, this is what I'm saying, and go back to the previous point, unless Ineos have already made up their mind in terms of the people who have come in and they know who they want to be the manager, like, they have to come out and do one or the other, either get rid of them. It's almost as if you have to say get rid of them or give them a new contract, in the sense that, because if you keep him for one more season where he only has 1 year left in his deal, he's obviously doing it for his job. As soon as he hit a bad bit of form,
well, surely one of those outcomes is much,
that's what I'm saying. Like, I can't see him getting a new contract. That's what I'm saying. Like, I just think if you leave him for one more season where he's effectively, it's like he's fighting for his job, I think it's just going to pile more pressure on. And even as I'm speaking, I'm saying this now, let's be honest, he's probably going to be gone fairly soon, isn't he? Like, I just thought, like, considering how much change there has been and what else has happened, I would be very surprised if they do stick with him. Because the easier thing for them to do now is actually get their own manager in to buy them that time, and if maybe get someone who they actually want to stick with for a few years and are willing to suffer through a bit of pain with, because that's what's going to still be the case for the next couple of years. Once they get rid of a lot of players who are there, big earners, and other players who still have been injured for this season, who shouldn't really be at the club. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's because you just, in terms, we're talking about getting consistency, that also comes down to actually consistency of availability. And there's also too many experienced players there who are on very good contracts, but just very rarely seem to be fit, and would be viewed as some of the better players, you know?
I reckon your next manager is German. Surely it's either Nagelsmann or Tuchel. Surely.
And Nagelsmann signed a new contract with Germany, so it'd probably be Tuchel. Like, I think it'd be good. I think it's a bit underrated.
I don't really care, to be honest. I actually don't care who the manager is. Like, in terms of this whole thing, or even the even the players coming in, all you want to see is, like, I think I saw Carragher mention it, and he's right. You do want to see actual, just a sense of players who have an idea of what they're trying to do and how they're trying to play and working towards something, even if it is younger players with a bit of experience in there. You just want to get that sense that it's not some maybe mercenaries, a few people coming towards the end of their career who picking up serious wages.
Given your connections at both clubs there, could you not do a job swap there, no? Ten Hag to Pats, John Daly to United.
What's with the problem? Listen, I'm looking forward to going to the FA Cup final. I've got a great day planned. I actually Googled there, how much alcohol can you drink between 7 a.m. and 3 p.m. is actually safe. But this is what I'm saying. I'm actually delighted that I'm gone, because I'm gonna be there. I'm gonna be having a bit of a crack with mates and all the rest of it. I'm not gonna have to be watching it on TV, being depressed when. And the worst thing is that it probably won't even be like a 4 or 5 nil. It probably will be, very likely could be. It's gonna just be one of them where City just have the ball and just absolutely pass, embarrass United, make a show of them, score maybe a couple of goals, take a handy. It's gonna be the possibly could also be the first cup final where the team rests players ahead of preseason. Like, just to have them ready to go for that first day of preseason. Like, City could do whatever they want. Obviously, just the Euros, but I think that's enough meandering and enough waffle for the end of this podcast. I've noticed that as I've been talking to the two of you, I've either been looking down or looking at the screen, smiling, kind of. So yeah, I'm gonna just shut up now.
Always entertained by you, Dave. Always.
I'm not sure, we didn't even get to mention Ange Postecoglou.
No, we'll leave that be for another day.
No worries. Take care, boys. Have a good week.
Cheers.
Good luck.